Okay, it is 4:01 p.m. on February 17th, 2021. And this is the February meeting of the Parley and Ingersoll Public Library Board of Trustees. Some of us are present in person in the program of the library. Others are present by Zoom. And I think the first order of business is to approve the minutes of both the January 20th, 2021 regular meeting and the 27th meeting, January 27th, which would have been our trust meeting. So if everyone's had a chance to take a look at those.
I think we had a little correction.
Oh,
yeah.
Let's see the 20th first.
Okay. He would like to strike the last line of the section 9. It's not incorrect. I'd just like to strike it off the minutes for future.
That's probably a good idea.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
She felt that that wasn't needed.
Okay. So we do have a correction to the minutes. Are there any other additions or corrections to the January 20th minutes? Hearing none. Is there a motion to approve those as corrected?
I will make that motion.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Have a second. Let's take a roll call vote, I suppose.
Okay.
I have a question.
Oh,
yes.
So I think we handle approving minutes for those that are absent.
I usually abstain. Okay. I mean, because that's, yeah. But if you feel like we got it right, I mean, you know, if you just want to trust us, you know, then you could also vote aye, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. So, approving the minutes as corrected. Roll call vote. Jana.
Aye.
Kim.
Aye.
Chris.
We'll say I trust you, but I abstain.
Okay, because you were absent.
I was absent.
Okay. Kathy.
Aye.
And Trig.
Aye.
Rhonda.
Aye.
And Keely.
Aye.
All okay. Right. So- corrected. And then turning to the minutes from the special meeting, which was done by Zoom on January 27th at 1:30. Do we have any additions or corrections to those minutes?
I move we accept them.
As written, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Do you have a second there? Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call though.
Okay, Keely?
Aye.
Rhonda?
Aye.
Trig?
Aye.
Kathy?
Aye.
Chris?
Aye.
Kim?
Aye.
And Jana?
Aye.
Okay, so those will stand as written as well. We will move on to public comment on the agenda, and I do note that in person, there are no members of the public present. Do we have anybody present by Zoom?
No, I do not see any.
Okay. Seeing none in that case, we will move past public comment to communications.
Okay, just a couple of things here. I wanted to let everyone know that I submitted the Rails certification for libraries for the Illinois State Library, and I did file the per capita grant. From the last meeting, I was going to attend one more meeting to see if there were any changes recommended by the State Library. There was nothing new brought up. So I went ahead and filed as authorized the per capita grant. And they did acknowledge receiving it. It sometimes takes quite a while before we ever hear anything on it, but it has been submitted. And then I wanted to just let people know as part of Rotary, we are there's a table out in the library for a food drive for Spoon River College students. Apparently they've had a lot of food insecurity out there, and it was something that Rotary felt we could do virtually during the pandemic is to try and help, as we have other food pantries, just try to help and collect from them. So just wanted to let you know that that is out there, and we'll be taking donations through the end of February.
Great. Yes. All right.
all I had.
Wonderful. We will move on in that case to our agenda for February. And the first item on there is the consent agenda from January of 2021, which was included in everybody's packet. Just having had a chance to review that, does anybody have any questions or is there a motion to approve that?
I had a question regarding, I believe it was utility expense.
I'm sorry, the utility expense, did you say? Yes.
And it seemed like it was substantially lower than the revenue for that.
Lower than was budgeted, or?
We haven't found it yet.
Yeah, year to date, it's down about 7,000 than what we budgeted. Just waiting and watch. I think we've seen a reduction in electricity because of the lighting. And you have to remember, we were also closed a month where we didn't have all the lighting on. It was actually like a month and a half last fiscal year and a month this fiscal year where all the lights were not on because it was just me working with individuals in the office lighting on. So we really didn't have as much on at that time. So it is a little bit low. I think we were anticipating more increases too in water and gas and electric. I've heard some people saying they're getting some bumps in gas because of shortages in Morton and other communities. So I don't know if that will trickle down and have increases here, but for right now, yes, we're under budget.
Good question. Any other questions? Anybody have a motion to approve?
I'll make that motion. This is Kim.
Thank you. Is there a second? Got a second. Okay. Any further question? Any further discussion or other questions? Hearing none, let's take a roll call, though.
Okay. Jana?
Aye.
Kim?
Aye.
Chris?
Aye.
Kathy?
Aye.
Trig?
Aye.
Rhonda?
Aye.
And Keely?
Aye.
All right, we will move on to our next item, which is COVID-19 mitigation in the library.
Yes, I actually just was kind of safeguarding us to put something on the agenda in case something had come up. But really right now, there really hasn't been anything that has been significant that's changed. We're still operating on the same safety protocols that we did before. We're still avoiding large group meetings. Our book club meets, I think if we get 6 people, that's plenty. We're still anticipating that we won't have in-person story times for children, but we're looking at possibly some outdoor activities later. Springtime, we'll have activity kits out for the kids. But I think right now everybody's glad to see our numbers are dropping as far as COVID statistics, but everybody's still being cautious as far as moving further on that. As far as the vaccine, I did send an email to Katie Lynn at the health department. From what I'm hearing, the recommendation is for library staff to be considered a 1C, and just wanted to let them know out of our 12 or so employees, you know, how many that we thought we would be having a vaccine through the library. And I've not heard a response yet. I'm sure they're inundated trying to get caught up with 1B people. But some of our staff from other jobs or other age-related reasons have started receiving shots. So I have about half that have started receiving shots and half that have not. And I think we just need to be patient as we go along.
Great. Just out of curiosity, when do we, start making planning or, you know, thinking about whether we're going to be able to do summer reading?
Right now, we're not.
Not doing it.
Yeah. Usually, you have to book. You start booking your performers and everything in January, February. We found that for what we spent last year, I felt the performers that were booked already in January or February, we would pay. Some then retrofitted their programming to do a virtual program. But for the little attendance and the cost of that, it was not worth it. So at this point, our monies are going to kits and possibly some outdoor activities if we can distance. Tiffany's still working on that, but at this point, most libraries that I am aware of have called it as virtual or maybe planned an outdoor activity or two. Our landscaping isn't set up enough to really do much here. So if she is doing something, she's looking at maybe talking about maybe going to the park or somewhere else that's larger venue, more safe. Sure. Not the roadways and parking lots. But yeah, it's kind of in the works a little bit. We're still planning to do a 6-week program. But yeah, those it just hasn't been worth on the virtual side for summer reading. I do have one thing. We're doing a display on the adult side to honor Hemingway. Ken Burns and Lynn Novick have a new film out on Hemingway starting the beginning of April. So we're going to have a display and other promotion that we're looking at that. And the other one that's very exciting, I think, we've done this kind of thing in the past locally, but we now have bigger reach. Rails Library System and Westchester Public Library have come up with a mathematical formula and working via Zoom that we are going to have an author program with John Sanford.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if people are familiar with him. He does the Lucas Davenport Virgil Flowers series. But the way they priced it, if they get enough people, it will only cost us 83 cents per person. And I have reserved about 50 registration slots.
Great.
So I'll have more information coming. But we would pay that amount for the 50 slots, whether people attend or not. But it does kind of lock in a rate. So that's pretty reasonable. If anybody is interested, let me know. I will not start advertising that, though, until probably the end of March, beginning of April, because people will sign up and say, oh, sure, I'll do it. And then they back out, and then you don't know, and that Zoom invite is out there and gone. So the promotion will be coming the end of March, the beginning of April. I think it's April 14th, and his new book, Ocean Prey, is out on the 13th.
Cool.
So
would that be a Zoom?
It will be Zoom, so every individual will have to do that with a computer via Zoom. But at least it's a way to
get
a little bit out there.
Well, it's adult programming, and
yeah,
that's great. So
I think our people miss the in-person, but I don't feel comfortable even looking at trying to schedule any of that at this time.
Cool.
So.
Phase 5 will be here sometime. You know?
Yeah, I think we'll be masking it for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on in that case. I think we've got quite a lot to do on the non-resident card fees. So this is in response to the governor's new law, but I don't want to take away from your speech on this. So
I was going to say, I don't know if everybody has had a chance to read, but I'll try to encapsulize this as best I can. We always have participated in the non-resident fee program, and the state library had cautioned us a few years back. The library has always given cards to people in Canton School District, and they are considered our non-residents. When it was brought to our attention in 2014 or so, we had to note that our non-resident fee was not zero, that we had a fee and that the Charles Trust was paying that fee. So we've been operating under that auspice for several years. But now that the library is receiving tax monies, we felt that it was not fair that the trust cover someone else when the residents of Canton had to pay for the card. So the mathematical formula is there to participate. It's what we had been kind of talking about. Using the estimated rate setting EAV that the city gave me, I don't know if anything has changed, but using that estimate and figuring the calculation, you know, a card would be $44.67. So I think basically our non-resident fee will be $45. And I did put in here, currently we have 611 non-resident cards from about 390 households. Of those that are children, that's about 132 of those cards in 80 households. So we set all these cards to expire on April 30th of 2021. There's a sample letter included in your packet of what we'll send the non-residents. These are things that we've kind of talked about in the past, but as Trigg had mentioned, there are some new laws that the governor signed that also affect this. One is the legislation that gives a board an option to let non-residents still have access to databases and ebooks. And that is optional, but that is something I think the state is striving to have no unserved areas. The other option is if people are a disabled veteran that doesn't pay property tax, that they should be exempt from having to pay a non-resident fee. And probably the biggest change here is the Cards for Kids Act, where the governor signed that any child living in a non-resident, and sometimes they'll use the phrase unserved area, if they are eligible for the USDA free and reduced lunch program, that any pre-K through grade 12 student should get a card for free. Some of the caveats with that are they have to prove their eligibility by income, and that is up to them. However, they said that if your community is in a community eligibility program, which means your pre-K through grade 12 students overall have a high enough economic low there, the entire district has qualified for community eligibility, and they all get free lunch and free breakfast, whether they are income eligible or not. And Canton District 66, the elementary and the middle school students are eligible under the community eligibility program. I talked to Tad Dorenzi about that for the upcoming school year, and he said, yes, elementary and middle school are, but he did not think the high school was eligible for community eligibility. When they started talking about this, I asked a specific question to Joe Natale at the State Library about homeschooled students, because I thought, well, if they live in, you know, in Canton School District, even though they don't attend Canton School District, would they also be falling under income guidelines for community eligibility? And I was told, no, they do not, because they do not, they're not enrolled in the USDA program because they're not in a public school. So they would be eligible for a free card, but they would have to prove their income eligibility. So basically lots of hoops and whatever here. I've talked it over many times with Brenda Hatzel, our circulation manager. And we thought perhaps the simplest way to do this was to say any students that are enrolled in Canton District 66 in grades pre-K through grade 8, which is under the community eligibility program, are eligible for the free cards. Any Canton District 66 students that are grades 9 to 12, we would ask them, are you eligible for free and reduced lunch? And take their word for it, yes or no, and then they would get a card. Any student that's pre-K through grade 12 that does not attend Canton School District, we would just ask them, are you eligible for free or reduced lunch? They can tell us yes or no, and we would go ahead and then issue them a card and take their word for it. Reason being on some of this is if you've seen the form that they have to fill out for the school district, and I'm hoping the teachers might join in here, it's a very complicated form, and then you're seeing people's income guidelines and determine, we have to then make that determination. So the number four that's in there is, if the student doesn't know if they're eligible for free or reduced lunch, what our plan is we will just show them from the Illinois State Board of Education, these are the income guidelines, and that's also included in your packet. So there's the chart, and they look how many people are in their household and what their income is on if they're eligible and that they would then tell us yes or no if they are. And then that way the staff doesn't have people running back home and we can just kind of go from there. Internally, what we're doing is currently all those people are coded as being in Canton School District but not living in the city. And what we'll do is recode people starting May 1 on if they're Canton residents not in the city and they get a free card, or if they're Canton residents not in the city and they pay for a card. The plan being that after we get through an entire year, those people that have not made any changes will delete off the system. We're giving them a year so we don't have to re-enter everything. And then that way we can kind of wrap that part up. Anybody coming in or anybody looking at the library card, and I do have a sample because we're going to have a different stamp. Same library card if they choose. I'm going to show this and I'll try and get it so everyone can see. But it's this large word non-resident. I don't know if you can see it. There's several on here, but there's, I guess, a certain ink that doesn't smear. So that's why we tried. I don't know if you all can see that. So there will be a different stamp for those people. The letter that's included in your packet, I've been able to go on Polaris. I can pull all those households. I can basically dedupe them and run a mail merge, and we'll have letters, the letter that you see going out. So they will be notified. I think we'll hear a lot of comments. For the people that have children, I think that might be helpful. It's the law. In that regard, there's nothing we can do about it. But as far as enforcing the are you eligible or not, even though we might have some people that fudge that, I think if we show them the chart and they say yes or no, I think that will be the easiest way for us to do that without sending people home to try and get paperwork. I think there's just so many barriers right now that I just don't think it's necessary. Most resident cards expire off the system every 3 years if they don't owe us money. So after a year, and non-resident cards are good for 1 year, then they would expire off the system. Now this $45, if somebody buys a card in September, it will be good for a full year. And every year the board can revisit the formula. I really doubt it will change too much, that $45 charge. Anybody else, you know, it will just be that they're either a resident or they're not. There are online maps that we can check to see if they're in the city limits or not. So it's a little bit confusing, but there are several pieces to this, that the board needs to approve, and I have listed those, and you might want to.
Yeah, summarize. I was gonna say, I think maybe we'll do it one at a time.
I think you should.
If that's okay.
Yeah, I think you should.
Just to take it line by line here.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Regarding the tracking, since children of different ages get treated differently when they move from one grade to the next, or somebody moves from one status to the next, how does the system know, or how do you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't charge them last year, but I need to charge them this year. How does that process work?
Well, it would be, you know, the next year, their card will expire a year from when they got it. So I guess the best, we give cards at age 3. So I guess say we're talking about maybe that eighth grader that then goes to high school. Is then, well, they didn't have to provide any proof, we took their word for it. If they're then in ninth grade and they come in for a card, we just ask them, are you eligible for free and reduced lunch? They say yes or no.
Get the card every year at that point. Mm-hmm. That's
when the
confirmation.
Right. And they'd use their same card and we just put an updated sticker on it with the expiration date. I'll also be notifying other libraries that are nearby in case any of the Canton cardholders are using them so that they're aware of it. But it should be something that we'll just update each year. Other libraries should be paying attention to expiration dates on cards, but I don't think they are the way they set theirs up. But we update our expiration dates on our cards. So did that answer that? Because we'll be checking with them when the card would expire after a year.
Yeah, I just see that it's a lot more complicated than it once was.
Yes.
That messaging.
Yeah, and we code all juvenile cards juvenile from basically age 3 to age 6 through 16. At age 17, we code them as an adult. Part of that is because of movies rated R. Basically, so on our stats, we're kind of lumping them all together as juvenile cards. But it would be a renewal on a card just like anybody else's.
I actually have a question as well. I appreciate that question because I didn't think about that, but that's a good point. The question that you asked Jonas Halley about homeschool kids.
I couldn't believe that answer.
Well, and that's what kind of seems a little strange to me. Mm-hmm. Did you have the sense that we're bound to accept their interpretation? Because I do see that there are some libraries that are just giving free cards to every kid. K through 12, period.
Yeah. Some are doing that, and that's up to the library's discretion. Some taxpayers, we thought, might be offended by that, but
I'm not sure I'd go that far to uh-huh. everybody, you know, without maybe a lot of serious discussion, or I'm not sure I would favor that. I mean, I'm not, if that's what the board wants to do, of course. I'm also sort of not sure that I'd be comfortable treating homeschool kids differently from kids that attend regular school. So I might favor not drawing that distinction, but I would be curious what other people thought about that.
Well, that's why we just thought if they don't attend, we're just going to ask them.
Yeah, do you feel like you...
Do you feel, you apply here? But.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have as much familiarity with...
Uh-huh.
And well, they'd be able to look at those income tables, I guess, and see that... I just thought that was very strange that they drew that distinction. But I guess we can talk about that a little bit down the list, because I think that's number 4 or 5. I think what I would want to, just the way to kind of tackle this as far as I'm concerned, at the bottom of the page, there's a list of 6 items. And I thought maybe we would just go kind of one by one through those and discuss them as they come up and try to make a complicated thing less complicated by doing it little bits at a time. So I guess the first item that we need to take up is, are we going to have non-resident cards at all? And I guess I would say, if you guys vote now, the rest of this session is going to be pretty short. Because we want to worry about the rest of this. I guess first, do we want to have any further discussion about whether we're going to issue resident cards to people that don't live inside the city limits at all, but are within our school district, as we have traditionally done? Understanding that some of them might be charged for it, according to that formula.
I think we ought to. Traditionally, in precedent, weren't we even supposed to treat the whole county? And then it shrunk.
Actually, that was not really legal, but the board chose to do that many years ago. They gave cards to everyone in Fulton County. And when libraries like Cuba and Lewistown started forming districts, the state really questioned that, because how can they form a district when their people would just say, well, I can get a card at Parlin for free. So at that point, what they ended up doing is and I'm assuming it's a board decision, they decided to interpret our district to be Canton School District, so that all those other people that lived in the outlying areas that were in library districts, whose boundaries are usually by library or by school district, they would have to get their card there and then they could use us. So then it kind of moved into that. After I became director though, the state library called us out because Randy would report our non-resident fee as zero. And they said, that's not legal, that can't happen. New people were at the system at that time, and they called us on it. The state librarian came here. We had a big discussion with the board on that, and they said, we have to have a fee. It cannot be zero. And that was when they gave us alternatives. They chose the lowest possible tax rate to be an existing library of 0.13, and they figured out a tax rate based on that. And then the board said, we will say that the Charles Ingersoll Trust pays that fee for those people. And then we went along with that for about four years or so. But now with the taxing issue, I don't think you can do that. So
if this follows, I sort of think from historical, even though it's been crunched smaller and smaller, that yes, we should have non-resident cards.
I think we would be pulling the rug out from a lot of people that have them right now. I mean, there's like 390 of these people that would not, that have library cards now, that wouldn't get them next year if we didn't do this.
The other thing is, if you don't recognize them, then other libraries won't recognize your people either.
Yeah.
So, it's in the spirit of cooperation. Yeah. I definitely would say yes.
All my joking about not doing it aside, to shorten the discussion, I think this is probably something we probably better do. Is there any further discussion on that? In that case, is there a motion to issue non-resident cards? Thank you. We have a motion.
Yes.
Second.
Any further discussion? Let's take a roll call vote.
Okay. Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
Trig Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emens.
Aye.
Thank you. So that one passes. I don't think this next one is optional, actually, because I think this is supposed to be equalized to what a household would pay for using us. So this is almost a formality, but is there a motion to approve the state's formula for you? So we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it. This is Kim.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll.
Okay, Jana Emens.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Trig Mead.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Great. Okay, so this is the first one we really kind of have a choice. So the next item on the list is whether to offer our electronic resources to people that don't have cards. Basically, right? People that are non-residents and don't pay the fee to have a card?
Right.
Okay.
And there are issues that will be complicated with this on, we'd have to issue cards to people in order to use online resources.
Just for the electronic resources. Right. So they would have a card, but it...
I think it would be complicated. We'd have to reissue certain cards that are, they call them e-cards only. And I think it's also an issue because we are paying our money and our tax money on materials and items that are ebooks and e-audios and databases, etc. The thought behind this is, again, I think the state pushed to not have any unserved people, but the thought is, but they're not taking your materials and where they can keep them. They're only using electronically, but we pay for that.
Well, and so some of these, like, does Overdrive, for example, does that service have, for example, like, you can get so many copies that are checked out at one time that's assigned to your account? So
different books are, I'm not sure if I understand your question.
Yeah.
Some books are one copy, one user. Some books allow simultaneous users. And some you buy and you only get 24 checkouts and they evaporate.
Okay. So there is a chance that we could theoretically like give service to somebody that would then make that service unavailable for somebody that did have a card.
Yes.
Okay. So that's where I might have a problem with it.
Yeah. And the other issue here is different vendors like this authenticate if you're a user in different ways. So there might be a period of time while our current non-resident that isn't paying any fee might still be able to check out ebooks for a while. We know that they will roll off the system in a year. You know, but there are people that, depending on how each vendor authenticates, if it's a valid card or not, or a card in good standing, there will be, I know there could be people that could sneak through. I think it would be few, but it is very complicated to set up authentication on the networking side. And we've had issues with that. And that's why we thought we would recode and then wipe out existing after a year.
Okay. How does everybody feel about that?
Kim, you're saying that this would be challenging to administer?
I think it would be challenging, and I question the fairness of people that don't pay anything, that they get access to the Journal Star that we pay $2,700 for, and all the ebooks that I just put $11,000 of grant money in, and we pay our normal fees. So I kind of personally don't feel it's fair to be giving non-resident people that haven't bought a card free access to e-resources. But I don't know overall how other libraries are viewing that, you know. But otherwise, yeah, the non-resident that has a valid library card, yeah, they can still get their e-books and they can, you know, have access to the Journal Star and the other databases. It would be difficult to, we just have to come up with a new code and a new type of card that would allow those people only that access and then talk to each vendor to see if they can carve that out. It is kind of messy.
Yeah.
I don't know. If the board wants to give cards to those people, I can look further in what's involved, but I kind of question a little bit the fairness. But
that's going to be confusing for those people too.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, I've got a card, but it only does this. And
right. And how to label it.
And I mean, I guess I have a problem, like I kind of alluded to earlier, with like the possibility of taking services away from people that have paid for it or are in districts and pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think for me, there would be a difference between like, well, if it's not going to hurt anything, you know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if it's just kind of like, if it's tough to set up and we can manage it, sure, why not? But, you know, if we are going to be like taking services away from people or access to materials away from people that do contribute, I'm not sure how wild I'd be about that.
As a little addition to Triggs, it is only $45. How much do they value being able to get the Journal Star and not pay the subscription fee themselves? How much just...
Which is significantly more than $45.
Yes,
so
I mean, or these books, two books or less on the E. Yeah, I think that'd be with the rest of us paying for it.
Okay.
Anybody else have thoughts about that before we take a vote on it?
Not allow it for now, and maybe a year from now revisit it.
Yeah, it's optional. This is a law that was put in there, I think, because the systems and the state libraries don't like the fact that there are Illinois residents that are unserved. But it is optional. So yes, it will be something, because every year you have to approve your non-resident card issuing, and you have to approve what the cost will be. So yeah, I would say it can be revisited.
Well, and if they ever want to give us a grant to cover those people, then, you know,
yeah,
we'll probably enthusiastically receive that and get right to work.
Right.
You know,
that,
so
that
they,
was my thought.
They want to
have the state,
mouth is on that, then.
State by everybody ebook access in Illinois. And,
hey, I mean, sure. Right. Like, we'll take the money and
yeah,
so we'll get right on that. Okay.
So
well,
motion
yeah,
to not.
I think I was going to say we can either have a motion to do it and then everybody votes no, or we could just move not to do it and then everybody can vote yes. So
motion not to do it.
Okay, I like that. Then we can maintain our traditional unanimity in favor of things.
A second.
We got a second.
Second.
Keely.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All right, so this is a motion not to do it. So we will take a roll call vote.
Okay. Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
Trig Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Okay.
That will pass. Thank you. So the next one to look at is whether we are going to approve issuing a card to people that are exempt from paying property tax because they are a qualifying disabled veteran. I think that this is not optional, right? Like, I think this is something that we sort of have to do. So I won't even ask how everybody feels about that. Is there a motion to do this thing that we're required to do?
Okay.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that. This is Kim.
Any further discussion? Let's take a roll call vote.
Okay. Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Trig Mead.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
And Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Okay, so this is probably the, this is kind of the heart of it. So this is going to be, what are we going to do with the Cards for Kids Act, meaning which kids are going to get free cards. And so we might even break this down further, you know, a little bit. So this is this discussion that's about in the middle of the page about who's going to get a free card and what do they have to prove basically to get it. So as Kim was kind of alluding to earlier, because of our community's income, our student population that's in K through 8, all of those kids are eligible for free lunch just because of like the community's income. So there was kind of like a maybe like a like what I would call like a look no further sort of dimension to that, where we can just assume because of how old they are and where they live, you know, they're eligible, because if we're like, because our criteria is, do you qualify for free lunch? And that's when we sort of have to give you a free card. So if they're in that K through 8 population, they get a free lunch anyway. So that would certainly save, I guess, administrative difficulty, you know, if they're that age. And then if they're K through 12, or they're 9 through 12, I'm sorry, we just ask. And if they say they are, then that's what's proposed that we would accept. And if they're not in the district, so this is the three is if they're homeschooled, right? If they don't attend the school districts.
Right. If they don't attend Canton School District.
Okay.
And it basically would be, homeschool. And if you're not familiar, a lot of people that do homeschool have their own name for their homeschool. So people will come in and they'll say, you know, I go to the John Smith School, or I go to the whatever. So they do have a name for their homeschool. So it could be any variety of names that we would have. Somebody say, I live at, you know, such and such an address on North Fifth, and I go to the, you know, Trigg Mead School. And then we hear them in a lot of different ways. But basically we thought if they're within what would be Canton School District, that we just ask them, you know, if they are within the boundary, or they can give us their address and we can look up their address online to see if that address falls within Canton School District. And then we can just say, you know, would you be eligible for free and reduced lunch if you attended? And then show them the chart. And for most of the little ones, they're coming in with the parent anyway, because that has to be address verified. So
I think maybe the first question, I mean, just kind of like try to do this in kind of an organized way. I think the first question that I would want to ask or get the board's like say so on is, are we going to draw a distinction between kids that attend the school districts and kids that are homeschooled? So, I mean, does anybody have any thoughts about that at the outset?
Yeah, I was going to say, my question was just because I was told it had to be USDA, and those would only be those who attend our school, which, well, it's just what I was told. I just assumed that they could just be worked into that formula based on where they live, but.
Well, he's not necessarily in charge. So I guess I've kind of alluded to maybe how I feel about this, which is that we shouldn't distinguish between them. I guess I kind of have two reasons for that. I do think one, administratively, it's probably a little easier that we don't have to, like, all we would sort of have to ask about, like, if we don't do it, then all we have to just check is how old they are, you know, and then if they're old enough, then we have to ask, and if not, then we just give them a card, you know.
You have to make sure they live within
our area, right, that we're not poaching anybody else's person. I guess just on a broader level, I kind of have two things. I guess I have a problem drawing a distinction between kids that attend homeschool and kids that attend school. And I would not want to deprive kids that are homeschooled of any opportunity to have access to a broader pool of knowledge or access to social activities or access to things that you might assume that they would get from in-person school that maybe they're not getting if they're homeschooled. Mm-hmm. For whatever little contribution it would make, I would not want to draw that distinction that would make it harder for them to get those things. So I guess that's how I feel about it, but I don't want to drown out differing opinions or other ideas about that. How does everybody else feel?
I feel like you do.
Okay.
The only thing is I don't want to violate any thing that we're held to mm-hmm. legally, but it sounds like that's an opinion. Is that an opinion or is that the law? Interpretation of the law?
I asked that question
yeah.
and I emailed it and that was what I was told. It's tied to the USDA program. And otherwise the state library line was, it's up to the applicant to prove their eligibility.
What is really the USDA program? You just automatically qualify if you're enrolled in a public school.
And your income meets a certain level.
But in our case,
it's because there's so many of them. I think it's if there are over 40% in your district or something, then it's community wide and they give the free meals to any child, whether they meet the income eligibility or not. So
there will be people that otherwise should qualify to pay that won't be.
That won't be, that would have pre-K to grade 8. Yes.
I'm in favor of not drawing that distinction as well.
Yeah, I guess I would say, too, and I appreciate that. I guess what I would say, too, is that it kind of seems to me that when they drafted this, it might have been kind of like a for convenience thing. You know, maybe it says in the law, well, it's like, it has something to do with this free lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
But I can easily see somebody that's just drafting this law and trying to write it and thinking like, well, what's a convenient shorthand for they don't have any money? You know, I mean, or they, you know, they're in need of like extra help or whatever. And just sort of like inserting that in there and not really meaning to say like, well, there's a one-to-one correlation between do you eat a free lunch every day and get this card
mm-hmm.
or more, is it just like, we just needed to have a shorthand for an income like eligibility standard, you know, that we can just kind of drop in here without really having to do a lot of work on actuarial tables and stuff like that. So even if it says that, I'm not really like, it would be hard for me to imagine that's what the legislature intended, you know, when they wrote it that like that to me. And we're always looking for the legislature's intent if we're interpreting a law. We're trying to figure out what they meant to do. So I, you know, with all due respect to Jane and Tally, I'm gonna reserve my right to disagree about that interpretation. So especially if there's libraries that are just giving them to everybody, because they really seem to be sort of like, you know, going a little bit, I mean, that's not what the law says.
If the entire board agrees with that, if we worded it and we just said, if the student lives within Canton District 66 and is within grades pre-K through 8, issue a free card. If the student lives within District 66 and is in grades 9 to 12, ask them if they're eligible and give them a card. Instead of saying attend and then leave off the one about not attending, that number 3.
Yeah.
And then if they don't know, then we would use the map.
I think that's simpler.
And I'll just change that wording to be lives within district.
Simpler and some would say less discriminatory.
Yes.
I don't know about you guys, but in 9th grade, I don't know that I would know my parents.
Right. I know they won't. I know they won't. And that's why I was like, Brenda, okay, what are we going to do here?
That sounds like me.
And they'll just take the word.
And they don't really have the time or the expertise really to get into their parents' bills and their.
Right. I don't want to send, somebody comes in and wants a card, I don't want to send them home and say you can't, you have to bring paperwork.
Go get mom's tax return from last year.
Yeah. Proving their address is one thing, but the rest of it to me is just And the paperwork, if you see the forms, I don't know if any of the teachers have seen the forms, but it is complicated on what they have to fill out and whether they got a SNAP card or a Medicare card, and were they taking in foster kids or not, and what other income they had from here, there, and yet. I mean, it is very, I looked at it and I thought, there's no way I want to put up this barrier, but.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I'll agree with that. That form is complex, and I know at the middle school, we have parents that don't even, during normal years, when we don't have the grant, that parents just don't fill it out, even if they are eligible, because of the complexity of the form. So I think your compromise works wonderfully, and I think it simplifies the whole system.
I would agree. I think that's, I'll make that motion.
Okay, we'll just change that wording. Yeah. Okay. And Trigg made that motion. Rhonda seconded. Okay, and this is the Cards for Kids Act.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Okay, Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel. Trigg Mead.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
And Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Okay, then the last little piece
is the letter. To approve the letter that gets sent out informing everybody of this change.
Uh-huh. I thought that was a nice and tactful way to put it. And so I would move that the letter passes.
Okay.
We accepted this.
Yeah, I had highlighted the part about the if we were going to give cards to anybody for e-resources. So I'll just make sure that that's unhighlighted because it wasn't shown in the decision. So.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second for that?
I'll second
it.
Oh, I think Jana won on that one.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, I was just going to mention, I believe it's a very well written letter. The second paragraph, which says, given the city residents will be paying a tax for service the trust can no longer cover. I just wonder if you can really throw the law under the bus more here and say trust can no longer legally cover. But I mean, regardless, I'm fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Is it legally?
Is it
legally
or?
I don't know. I mean, was it ever legal for it to do it in the first place? Like that's a good question.
I'm just raising a question.
The state saw it as a compromise at the time that I was called on it. You know, that they wanted us to not do it, but if we were going to do it, they would allow us to do it using their formula, because I sent letters back and forth making sure I had documentation stating nowhere in our books does it show money going to that fund. It
so
was just a...
I think you could accurately say cannot legally cover it.
If we're unsure,
yeah.
I'm fine with that, leaving it as is.
Given, so the sentence is, given the city residents will be paying for a tax for service, the trust cannot legally cover the fees?
I think that's accurate.
Okay.
I think if we say no longer legally cover it, then we're kind of implying that it was like legal in the first place, which I think is a little dubious.
Okay.
So
say the trust cannot legally cover the fees for the non-residents. Good distinction.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's
mm-hmm. Any other comments on the letter?
Okay. Well, I think what I heard was that motion was to approve the letter as corrected. So is there a roll call vote on that motion?
Okay. I was going to say, I hope I'm going in the right order each time. Try. Jana Emmons.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Trigg Mead.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Okay. Got through that.
Okay, yes. Good job, guys. This we've been talking about that for a while. So that's definitely, you know, it's nice to have sort of like made that decision. So the next item on the agenda is actually I'll tell you what. I'd like to take this a little bit out of order. Can we do the investment policies first, because that's quick?
Sure.
And we're kind of like running up against our 5 o'clock unofficial stop time.
Hey, Trig, I just wanted, I've got to leave at 5. I have another appointment. I apologize. I didn't realize that we needed extra time tonight. So I just didn't want to disappear and not tell anybody.
Much appreciated. We are actually going to strive not to need extra time. So let's do the investment policies first, because those are quick. So there's no change from last year,
right?
I mean, so we just have to do this every year. Both of them. One is basically how our money is invested, which it is invested in Mid-America. And then we also have to adopt, because we have a share of the trust, have to adopt a statement about how that's going to be managed as well. There was some negotiation and compromise about this a few years ago. And the product of that was basically to make sure that we're holding the bank to the same standard that we have to hold ourselves, which is still the case. So does anybody have any questions or feel like we need any change to that this year? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve those? We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that. This is Kim.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Let's take a roll call vote.
Okay. Keely Vollmer.
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel.
Aye.
Trig Need.
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam.
Aye.
Chris Layton.
Aye.
Kim Fraley.
Aye.
Danny Emmons.
Aye.
Okay. So those will get done. For the budget, we've had this for a month to sort of chew on, and take a look at it. I know that there is going to be some uncertainty, as there usually is. I mean, the timelines for when the insurance figures get approved are always sort of after the fact for us. The reason why we're doing it so early or earlier than we traditionally done it is because we do need to tell the city in March what to levy for us. So to do that, we've sort of wanted to have the budget done ahead of time, asking for. So knowing that a budget is a guideline, and not a document set in stone, I guess my question would be, how comfortable do we feel approving this, just knowing that there is some uncertainty out there, or that we might need to amend or be flexible about some of those items like the health insurance and the dental. I don't know how the board would feel about that, but I can say that I do think it's unlikely that we're gonna have final answers on that before we need to tell the city what to levy for us. So I think kind of our options are like kind of bite the bullet and just do it, knowing that we may have to amend it or maybe wait a month. And see if we do get some more information about that, and then just kind of accept that we're gonna have a pretty tight turnaround on getting our levy letter out. But I mean, I think both are good options. So how does everybody feel about that?
So it absolutely has to be approved by the next board meeting?
We sort of need to know like how much income we're gonna ask the city to levy for us. Which is a component, right, of the budget. I mean, the income side of it.
Maybe I'm getting the timeline off, but on the budget on the FY22 draft, I'm putting the tax income with the city already levied for us.
Okay.
So I have the $288,109 I have as the income.
Okay.
Because that's what we will be getting in our fiscal year 22.
That's true.
So that amount is in there. I was going to ask you after the meeting on what to prepare for the levy request we'll ask for in March.
But that would be for 23.
Which is the next monies, yeah. So this money here is the city money. And the amount that we put in the levy for things like the audit and the IMRF and everything really based on this current year, even though the monies won't come till next.
Yeah, because we sort of estimate, right? We sort of like, because that's the best we can tell.
See, so what we'll ask them to levy in March will actually be, based on this next one that we're doing now, but it'll be payable in 23.
So given that, I don't think we have to absolutely do this today. or even next month. Well, I mean, because we sort of know.
I don't know if they will be asking me to sit in on their budget meetings. The law, correct me if I'm wrong, but the law says that the library board determines its budget, not the city.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the city might want from us. Last spring, they said they didn't need us because we didn't have tax monies yet when they did their budget work in March and April. So this year, I'm not sure what they're going to request. But we do then also for March have to request our levy that they will do in December.
So here's the thing. Mindful of the facts that we're still being recorded. So it kind of seems to me that first off, that is exactly what the law says, that we do our own budget. And there was some discussion during the levy process the first time that maybe the auditor would like to kind of like help us with our budget. Or not the auditor, the
city controller,
the controller, their financial consultant, which was, I think, provoked a sort of sharp response from me after the meeting, because there's absolutely no reason why they need to be involved in setting our budget priorities. That has nothing to do with them, in the sense that they're supposed to levy for us and we have the expertise and the knowledge for what our priorities need to be in a way that they do not. And so it kind of seems sort of doubtful to me now that the pressure's off, like now that that process is kind of finished and we're sort of in a groove, it doesn't seem to me that they're going to want to necessarily stir that nest up again. Like they may not want to even think about it. Like that sort of seems to me to be the most likely thing. However, I could see a virtue in saying, well, either the board has already done this, if they try to interfere, and sort of say like, well, they've already passed it. So, there really isn't anything we can do at this point, which would advocate for sort of getting it done before those meetings happen. Or on the other hand, saying, well, it's still kind of murky. the board hasn't really finished that yet. So we'll get back to you once we talk to them about it. I can sort of see either way. I mean, I do think, I guess what I'm saying is like my priority would be maintaining the independence of our budget process from any interference from the city, if they try, which they may not. I don't think we have to get it done today. And it is sort of like hitting up against our unofficial Ralph Rowland blessed stop time. So I think that at least for this month, we should table it. And we can talk about what we need to have ready for next week or for next month, as long as the board's comfortable with that. I do think that we probably should make it a goal to pass it next month, if possible. But we may have more space on the agenda for that, because we want to worry about the cartoon case thing. And then we can give it a fuller discussion, okay. Which is also...
I just wanted to say, I went over every line of this. Talked to Kim for probably over an hour with questions.
Great.
She was wonderful at answering the questions. I think it's very well done.
Great.
I think we're going to have some painful decisions in the future, whether that's because of COVID. I think the population base will shift and we'll have to just in the future what we like to do. But this is great.
Well, no doubt in my mind. I did not scrutinize every line, but I'm glad that you did, and I appreciate you doing that work.
The salary schedule is up extremely high compared to like last year, with less employees, with less IRM rep employees. So I think it's a thing that's showing that will come that we might have to deal with it. So.
And that makes sense with those changes. So, do we want to table it or do we want to vote on it?
For
22, yeah.
It's up to you. I don't know that I'm going to be able to have anything necessarily happen that will change it, other than knowing if we get that unbelievable 1.46 raise for health insurance instead of the 12 I estimated. I've never dealt with a situation here where I've had to amend a budget, but I would assume that that would be internal if you would so choose to do so.
It's pretty easy.
Otherwise, aren't we just coming in under if we estimated higher? Does that matter?
No, I mean, it's a guideline. I mean, it's very much like a guideline. So it's just our best guess. I think the virtue to tabling it is that we could have like maybe more of a discussion we're prepared to have right now. I mean, just because of time concerns and things like that. But at the same time, I don't know that there's anything that I would want to change about it. You know, I mean, so I'm not sure that I would necessarily have a lot myself to add to a discussion next month. So
my bigger question is, what figures will I give them for saying this is what we want to levy for the next year? And that I wanted to just run by you before we bring to the group.
Yeah, we'll do that.
But on this,
well, the answer is going to be the same as this year, but plus 5%.
Okay.
Like that's the.
Now IMRF would be less, you know, and that will.
Yeah, because that'll have our
I can show you that. Yeah. But that's more where I have a concern. It's been difficult to guesstimate compared to other years. We shortened our fiscal year last year to 11 months. We had 1.5 months of COVID closure the year before, 1 month this year. So in estimating all these costs, it's been very difficult to try and target it in because, well, certain things just didn't happen. No adult programming, no conferences, but virtual, so it was cheaper. Just a variety of things that affected our normal numbers. And I don't think we're going to know any different until we get through it again to then determine, you know, what might be less.
Yeah.
And as I had a part-timer leave and I reduced some of her hours, but not all, because I didn't want to cut it too much, not knowing if business picks up more, will I need to add those back in? So it's just kind of a funny year to try and target in any more than what's here.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it kind of like cuts across the years, right? It sort of cuts across our fiscal year in a way. So,
yeah.
I would say, from my opinion, I didn't spend much time as Ron did coming through this. I did spend some time, but I would be in favor of pushing it out a month just so that I could look at it closer. Not to take anything away from your budgeting, Kim. I just want to educate myself more on it, and I think that would give me more time, and I'm not doing this just for selfish reasons, but I just think it's a good idea to maybe have more discussion about it.
Yeah, we sometimes take a whole meeting to do the budget, and you know, we kind of do it in the last 3 minutes of, you know, and we really will have spent a little less time on it than we normally do. Do you know on top of your head what the agenda might look like next month? I mean, do we have
yes. I have down the levy request. And the succession plan, which is a boilerplate plan.
What I've been
working on with people are more what would be procedural things.
Okay.
Real certification is done. And then the budget or anything that might come up with the city. And I'm not sure what to anticipate, if anything.
So we would have kind of a lot of space for it next month. I mean, and I would agree. I mean, I've never, in the years that I've been a trustee, I've never found fault with it, you know, and I don't anticipate doing so this time, but, you know, we're supposed to be stewards, you know, of the library's money. So I probably would probably favor tabling it as well, which I think I have the inherent authority to do. So I check my rules. So I'm actually on my own authority going to table that to next month. And it is like, if you're curious, holding lightning in my fist. So it's really powerful to do that. And I'm actually, since we're way over something, I'm going to table the trusted candidates too.
Okay.
So is there a motion to adjourn?
I would like to just say I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes, that was very nice.
Yeah, I neglected to stick it in January's packet. So it was set off to the side and we just didn't see it. So
I thought that was very nice too.
Yeah. I just think it's nice that everybody personally thanks. Thank you.
Well, we certainly appreciate them too. You know, they are pretty wonderful. So is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make it.
I'll second it. And we'll take a roll call now.
Okay. Jana is gone. Kim Fraley?
Aye.
Chris Layton?
Aye.
Kathy Ludlam?
Aye.
Trig Mead?
Aye.
Rhonda Vogel?
Aye.
And Keely Vollmer?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody, as always. Stay warm, although we may have got through